morning. If you smell that sort of a topic, they kind of tangentially relates to both of them, though both of them are somewhat indirect. And that's the issue of having a website that sells things on Shabbos. A website that's open on Shabbos that people can purchase things on Shabbos. So I want to start by talking about credit card transactions in general. We could theoretically skip this part of it, but since you're learning Kiddushin, I think it's relevant. And if you're learning Kiddushin as a whole, the ideas of Kinyanim, especially if you're doing Pekiyas, as you get to the Mishnah Chavav, and all the other Kinyanim that come up throughout the Kiddushin, I think it kind of rounds it out nicely. So, what happens when you buy something with a credit card? Let's say in a store. So you go into the store, you take your items, you swipe your card, or you stick it in the chip reader, and you walk out of the store with your item. At what point do you own the item? So we know that there's two different kinyanim that normally one can make. Kinyan kesef, kinyan mashicha. So the mashicha is certainly there. You're holding the item, you picked it up, you walked out of the store. If you buy it online, though, it's not so clear that you're actually ever going to do mashicha on the item because it's being sent by, being sent by mail, and may just end up, wherever it ends up. And when you pick it up, you don't necessarily have das kinyan, and certainly the mocher doesn't have das kinyan. I'm not going to get into that part of it. But is there a transaction that takes place when the card is charged? So is that kinyan kesef? That's the question at hand here. So what's happening is you have a third party, the credit card company. Without getting into the weeds in terms of how credit card transactions work, there's a merchant account, and there are a lot of third parties. But for your from what you see, Visa or MasterCard or the bank that's behind it is telling the guy behind the counter, don't worry, we'll pay for the item on his behalf. Let him take the item out of the store. And the same thing when it's online. Obviously, we know it's more complicated than that, but that's basically what's happening. A third party is paying on behalf of the buyer. So on Daf Zayin and Kiddushin, we have what's called Mekudesh Zmitin Eved Kanani. It's not a... It would be kind of... I would say the wrong way to phrase it is to call it a Kinyan Eved Kanani, because Kinyan Eved Kanani is buying an Eved Kanani. But this is a Kinyan that's similar to the Kinyan where an Eved Kanani buys himself back, where somebody pays on his behalf, and now he's free. And the Gemara says, Helech Manavis Kachi Lepodim Mekudesh Zmitin Eved Kanani. So third party gives the money to the wife and says, "Hey, let's money be attached to the plony." So that's a valid form of kedushin. And the Gemara later, after going through, there's Arev and Kanani and Midin Shneim, the Gemara says, "Marava v'chein l'nyim mamona." The same thing applies to mamo. So you can buy anything that normally is a part of a kesef. You could buy with this Kenyan Eved. Kinyan, we'll call it Kinyan Eved Kanani, just for simplicity's sake. Okay, the Rambam may or may not hold of it, Linyan Mamon, the Rambam may hold, the Ran points this out on Daf Gimel and Daf Yarif, that the Rambam may hold only of it, Midin Arev, not the other, not Kinyan Eved Kanani, and Hamidin Shneim, but Shulchan Aruch and Poshim Mishpat, Kuftavi Siftalit, says that there is a valid kinyan in all aspects of mamon, this kinyan midin eved kanani. So there is a machlokes between the tur and the beis yosef about the following: do you have to actually be mamana the third party as a shliach or not? So what's the issue? The Ramah quotes the tur that you do have to be mamana this third party as a shliach. So, the Tzos asked the following kasha: why do you need din eved kanani? Tainach by kedushin, so the woman is being mekudeshes. But when it comes to a mecher, a matana, so why don't you just say zachen l'adam shel b'fano? Some guy decides to buy me lunch and pays on my behalf. I don't need a fancy Kenyan Evikanani. He bought me lunch, and now, you know, he paid for it, and now it's mine. So the Ketos says that maybe that's the issue, you know, the Tur and the Beis Yosef are talking about two different cases, that if the third party is paying as a matana, meaning he's saying, I'll buy the lunch for you, and that's it. You know, you don't owe me anything. But if you're going to be mechayev the buyer to now pay the third party, so then that requires something more than that. That's not zachon l'olam b'funav, and therefore you need a minui shlichus, meaning you need the buyer to say, hey, you know, act on my behalf. I need, you know, otherwise, you know, he's being the chayv money for with no context.
In an epic master shliach, in general, in an epic master shliach.
Yeah, but so I guess you would say like the thing was a gita v'yoda v'ankachas, something like that, that he's paying on his behalf, and
I thought that's the whole point. We don't say that. That's why you have to come up with this opinion.
Yeah, so.
It should be possible to
Okay, I have to look at the
TV address.
He says that if there's no hischaivus from the lokeach to the third party, then you don't need anything here. It's regular zachon l'shalom v'funav. Somebody buys something for me and pays for me. That's zechiyah. The only time you need the shlichus is when somebody else, when the lokeach is actually chayev money now to the third party, meaning the credit card company laid out the money for me. They're not doing it for free. They're expecting me to pay them back. So you need shlichus in order for that to happen. Otherwise, it doesn't work. You didn't have a knan. That's what he. That's how he explains the Ramah. The Nesivus says that. No, if there's a hischaivus, then you don't need the special kinyan of a kinyan, meaning the hischaivus itself will create the kinyan. Rather, what the Tur and the Ramah are talking about is when it's kind of a down payment and it's not a full payment. So if not for Evakinani, meaning the lokeach has to pay the rest, we would have said that it's not a kinyan, and the chiddush of Evi Kanani is that you can pay it down. Right now you're gonna have the same kasha, but Evi Kanani pays the whole thing. I don't know, but I guess for both the Ketos and the Nesivus, it's more the application to Mamonos. Why do you need the chiddush? Why does Rabbi say v'chidin lein Mamona? What's the nafkamina? And these are the cases that they carve out as being the nafkamina as opposed to the model itself for Evakinani or Kedushin. We know for sure you can't use Zachon L'shalom v'funav. Anyway, the nafkamina for us is that if you need a formal shlichus, so the credit card company, we would hope, is not considered a Jewish entity. We'll have problems with ribbis, and therefore you wouldn't have any formal shlichus in that regard. So it wouldn't be a formal kinyan midin Evakinani. Whereas if you assume that either the hischaivus itself creates, like the nesivus, the hischaivus itself, you don't need to come on to Evi Kanani, that the fact that now I owe the credit card company money, so that itself creates a kinyan. That would also solve the issue. I think the first to discuss this is an article in Tchumen where the author suggests that credit card transactions are midin Evi Kanani. I'm not sure if he addresses the fact that no money ever changes hands in any of these things. So it's kind of just, you know, in some computer somewhere. Now it says that the credit card company has $25 less in their account, and the merchant account has $25 more. And I don't know if money ever changes hands in all these banking transactions, like physical money. So if you're coming within Hischaivus, it doesn't matter. Meaning if the Hischaivus itself can create the Kinyan, then that could be a form of Kinyan Kesef, even without the physical transfer of money. I think that's an important point. The more pressing issue is, can you actually do a kinyan kesef on movable items? That's the Mishnah says. Nechazim sheish lehem achrayis niknin bekesef shtar v'chazag. And nechazim shein lehem achrayis, or shein lehem achrayis, ein niknin alem mashicha. The only way to acquire movable items is with mashicha, not with kesef. And here we have a famous machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says, min haTorah, both metatlin and karkos are nignes the kesef. And why did they say that mashicha is required for metatlin? Because shema yomru nistruhu shitecha ba'aliyah. So let's say you buy you go and you buy, and the case here is wheat, which is interesting. We'll get back to that in a few minutes. You go and buy an item from let's switch it to a couch. So you go to buy a more modern day application. You go and buy a couch from a furniture store. You put the money down, and and then you see it doesn't fit in your car. So you say, okay, let me come back on Thursday with the truck. In the meantime, the store catches fire, and the store owner wants to save his goods from being burned in the fire. So whose stuff is he going to save first? His own stuff, the stuff that he didn't sell yet. The other stuff that people who didn't bring their truck back yet, he's going to say, forget it. They paid for it already. It's their achrayus to take. And therefore the rabbi said that all metalton have to be nicknames the mashicha, not because of the achrayus basically is on the store owner until the buyer takes possession of it.
So the concern is that he'll say they were burned or that he'll let them burn?
Well, he'll say or he'll let them burn. I mean, either way, it'll be a problem. Yeah, he could okay. He could say they were... I mean, if there was no fire, it's kind of hard to make that up, I mean,
the store was burned.
Right, the store is intact. You can't say that, Aliyah. It has to be that was a fire, and then when there's a fire, so then he can, he could also take the stuff, run off with it, and say that your stuff was burned in the fire, that too. But that doesn't mean...
The way the chashash is phrased is Shema Yomar.
Yeah.
So why is it phrased that way?
I guess... Well,
the concern is that he'll let them burn.
I mean, he'll let it burn, and then when the guy comes back, he'll say to him, certainly, he could also run off with it and say that it was burned, too, and nobody will know. I mean, maybe nobody will know, but either way, it's going to be a problem for the buyer.
Or his could have burned, and he replaced his with other person.
Right, we'll get to that in a minute. That's a little bit different. That's Rav Yochanan. Reish Lakish holds straight out that midah raita, you need mashicha to be kona metapolin. Now the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Bechoros, Avodah Zarah Ayin Aleph and Bechoros and Gimel Mabez talk about how to do a kinyan with a goy, and this is a big discussion for Pesach when you do Mechir Summit. If things were done on a small scale, mashicha would be the easiest way to do it. But we can't; it's not practical. So, can you do a kinyan with a goy without mashicha? So, the assumption based on psukim is that it's a complicated sugya, but it should be switched. Meaning, whatever is min haTorah for a Yisrael is the opposite for a goy. So, according to Rav Yochanan, min haTorah it's for kesef. And therefore, with a goy, it's mashicha, and for a tzlokish, it's the opposite. The min haTorah is mashicha with a yisrael, and so with a goy, it's kesef. And lahalacha says machlokas, Tosus in Avodah Zarah quote there machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi, and I think majority of the Rishonim hold like Rabbeinu Tam that. Mashicha is kone b'ovid l'chavim, meaning Yisrael min haTorah is with kesef, and Mashicha for a non-Jew is the optimal way of doing a kinyan, and Rashi holds that Mashicha ain't a kone b'ovid l'chavim, and you have to use kesef. So Rashi, it would be much easier to do Mechiras Chametz. He just gives the money. He just gives the money, and that's it. But we're machmir for Rabbeinu the Tam, and therefore we have all these different kidyonim because we can't actually do the Mashiach. So what happens if there's no chash of Yom Ruchitecha Nisif of Aliyah? So that's the Bala Itur is quoted in the Beis Yosef, and the Rama mentions it in the Yesh Omrim, that maybe this only applies to an attic, but in a house, we don't say, the Zero is only in, if the stuff's in the attic, if the stuff is in the house, it's not Shechiyah that this would happen, and therefore we don't have to worry about it. A more common scenario is discussed by Rabbi Akiva Eger, and that's very relevant to this case. When you buy, let's say, something online, you're not buying, and I gave the couch example specifically. You buy a couch, it's that couch. There's no other couch in the store that's the same. That's the one, that's the same couch that you could say that it got burned in the fire. If you buy an item, a laptop, whatever, anything, so nobody's going to say, your laptop, the one that you paid for it, and we put it aside, and we put it in a box, and it got burned in the fire, that you can't, the seller's never going to be able to get away with that, because there were 50,000 other ones in his warehouse. Why after that one got burned? Maybe a different one got burned. So in a case where it's a Dervish Eina Mesuyam, where there's no specified item, Rabbi Akiva Eger says that maybe, according to the Bala Iter, meaning if you assume that this Xera was not all-encompassing, Xera to do Kinyan with Mashiach, then on a Dover Shein of Mitzvah, maybe Kesef would work. So there is a possibility of doing a Kinyan Kesef, perhaps, or at least the argument could be made that you can do a Kinyan Kesef with an item that's nondescript. One last way to do Kinyan Kesef here, the Mishnah Kulin talks about, the Mishnah Kulin alludes to the fact that maybe you could buy behemoths before Yontif with Kesef. And the Gemara says, why is that? What happened to the Gzeira? So Amar Yochanan Ba'arba Prakim Elu Hamidu Chachamim Devrayim Al Din Torah. That during the four times a year before Yontif, so people don't want to wait. I don't know why the transaction is going to be delayed, but they want to know that they own the item right when they put the money down, and therefore for Yontif item, for the Yontif behemoth, so the Kenyan Kesef goes through right away. Nobody here recalls the Lulav scandal of 2005, right? You guys are too young. So basically, in 2005, most of the Lulavim come from Egypt. There was one of the people who was involved farming or whatever, so he cornered the market. He bribed the Egyptian government. He bribed the Egyptian government to corner the market. So he had all the lulavim. This was already known in Eretz Yisrael, and they knew that the price of the lulavim would be higher. Okay. Now, there's two distributors of lulavim in America. Okay, both of them show up to the docks on Motzei Rosh Hashanah, and I imagine it's a whole container, a big 18-year truck. It's a lot of lulavim that you need, a big shipment. It's not something you just put in the back of a minivan. And they're both waiting there. They distribute to the entire population of America. They're both waiting there, and there's only one shipment. And the one guy, I don't know how the conversation exactly went. One guy said to the other, I paid for it. Here's my my bill, and here's the number, the tracking number of the item. And the other guy said, I have the same thing. So basically what the guy did was he sold the same shipment to both distributors. Okay, so they start arguing, it's mine, it's yours, Lulava Guzzle. And they had to go to Din Torah, but you can't, they said, how are we going to have a din? You can't have a din Torah. It's Motzei Rosh Hashanah. If we spend the whole week tied up in a din Torah figuring out who's the lulavim they are, they're not going to get to anybody before Sukkot. So they, they worked something out that each one was makna, his chus, and the lulavim to the other one. and whatever, they worked it out after Sukkot. You know, who makes the profits, who doesn't make the profits, how I don't know how they got one of the, they probably lost money because they both paid the guy and he was, who knows where he was. But anyway, so at the time, I gave a shiur on this, I was talking to Rabbi Willig, and he pointed out this Mishnah Chulin, that, you know, normally they would have to show up there at the dock, and whatever kidney, you know, it wouldn't be Mashiach with a truck, you would probably drive it like manhig, like an elephant, you go with a truck. But because it's like the Mishnah Chulin, the Prima Gada mentions this regarding wine also, wine for Kiddush, that everybody wants to own the lulavim right away, so maybe Kinyan Kesef would work, and if they paid Kesef for the lulavim, so whoever paid first, Lechora would own the lulavim. Okay, so that's kind of a hakdama. To the next part, and that is having a website that sells items on Shabbos. Now, keep in mind that when you have such a website, nothing is obviously operational. You're not going to ship anything out. This is when you have a private website. I when I looked into this, Amazon was not really that popular in terms of for sellers. I tried to look into it this week a little bit. I don't think it's much different. I mean, even if Amazon's shipping your stuff, the money part of it is less complicated than maybe other ways of doing this. Let's leave Amazon out of it. Let's assume that you have control over the shipping. Yeah.
The difference between the credit card usage and the debit card.
Yeah, we'll get to the, there might, in terms of Kenyan Kesef. Right, but still, somebody's paying. It doesn't get processed. Like, it's not instant. The money doesn't go from you to the it doesn't go from you to the seller directly. There are people in between that will transfer the money. But yes, it will come out of your account. I just don't know if it will arrive in the seller's account right away. I mean, they'll hold the money and they're not going to give it back to you ever. But it's a good point. I'm not 100% sure, but I would think that there's enough third party involvement here that it doesn't really make much of a difference in that regard.
Christian.
What?
When for a credit card, does it make a difference if you sign the receipt or if there is no receipt at all?
I don't think so. I think that's more for to guarantee that it's an authentic sale, but I don't think that. Like you're signing a thing. Your signature is between you and the credit card company. It's not a shtar, it's chayvus per se, because you filled out a contract, or when you apply for a credit card, maybe you didn't read the fine print, but it is a contract between you and them, and you're going to abide by certain rules and regulations.
Does it make a difference if you don't have a receipt, you can never return that item that you just bought. If you have a receipt.
Yeah, returning is maybe for next year or a different time. Returning items is a whole different discussion here. I don't think that the ability to return something makes it not a Kenyan. I think for a lot of return policies are more, as a tova, we're going to let you return it. Other return policies are more concrete, but the return policy basically allows you to undo that, meaning to do another transaction and get your money back. I don't think it would be problematic if return policy made it not a Kenyan, you'd have a lot of problematic situations where you'd have to talk about Kiddushin with a ring where the jeweler has a return policy. It's hard to say that you don't own the ring just because you.
But if you can't return it, then we know by that.
If you can't return it, you own it. Right, right. But here we're talking about the item wasn't shipped yet. It's not in your possession. So, and especially when we talk about Shabbos. So before we talk about Kinyan on Shabbos, we have to talk about where is the Kinyan to determine what's actually taking place on Shabbos. So you have a website open. Some guy goes on your website and buys something, and he puts in his credit card information, and now, does he own it? Has he made a Kinyan with you, or has he just, you know, put down money? And, you know, if you look in Bav Metzia, there's a Misha Para. If you back out of a deal that... it's hard to say there's a Misha Para nowadays when there's a return policy. In the old days, if you put down money and then you backed out of a Kinyan, so you would get a Misha Para, basically get up in shul, and when they said the Misha Beira, they should put Misha Para, Mordechai says that, Misha Para me anshe dor mavel, who are you from Misha and all the Diburo? That... The Mordechai in Bava Metzia says that they would announce it in shul. I don't know if they would say it by name, but...
they would announce it to be like an awful guy.
I don't remember the details, but the Mordechai does mention something about just being a hachroza in the shul. But whether it's that or whether it's just, you know, a bad thing to do, it is a bad thing to back out of a deal when you put down the money and then do Mashiach. If there's a return policy, I find it hard to say if they're going to let you return it before they ship it out. I'm saying after they ship it out, especially if they're going to pay for the return shipping. I can't imagine there's a Misha Para if you say you don't want it, and they can save themselves the hassle of shipping it out.
Going back, we do pass on like the Nesivos?
In
terms of like the credit cards that...
In the Hisfaivos? I'm not sure. I don't know how we pass it on this. I mean,
if a rabbi willing, you know, to go on in this case to go based on when the money was given, I assume it wasn't
right. It wasn't a cash transfer. Yeah. So I there's another factor of situmta. The way the world is to. But then if you're getting into situmta, then you don't really need to come on to Kinyan Kesef. But yeah, it is an interesting question. You know, as we get more and more into cashless society, you know, how can you buy a lulav and esrog online? So if you start to question that, though, you're right. The distributor certainly, you know, did not pay cash, kesef mezuman, and so he's calling it a mashicha. The question is. You know, even that, like, who's standing there at the docks to do the Kinyan with him? It's interesting road to go down. So now, let's say you have a website, and let's say you need to take PayPal, which is basically just a third party, fourth party. It doesn't really matter how many parties are in between, and somebody puts in an order on Shabbat. So, going back to our kind of hakdama, did the Kinyan actually take place or not? So, and if a Kinyan did take place, is that a problem? So, we know that you're allowed to, let's say, set a Shabbos clock. You can set a Shabbos clock to go at least for most achronim nowadays. Shetro, it says I was outvoted before I was born. But the Brisa says that according to Beis Hillel, you can set a system, at least, and even for a shefter, if it's already going before Shabbos, that continues into Shabbos. So, should the same apply to Kinyanim? So, this Rabbi Kiva Eger brings up, and he brings up two scenarios that might be problematic. One is that if you do the transaction before Shabbos, but the Chalos Kinyan takes place on Shabbos, is that a problem? And number two, is it a problem to have a Kinyan al Tanai where the Tanai is fulfilled on Shabbos? So both of those he raises as being problematic. The Torah specifies right straight out that this is no different than any other, you know, form of automation. And since no malacha, nothing's taking place on Shabbos, it's mutter. Rabbi Akiva Eger brings up this issue. Yeah. We'll get to that. That's where the ksiva comes from. That's our client ksiva. We'll get to that. So the discussion is interesting. It starts really with a discussion about Pinya Ben. So the Rivash talks about, is it permissible the day the Pinyan Ben is on Shabbos? Can you do a Pinyan Ben on Shabbos? Legitimate question. So he says it's also for three reasons. One, because it's Doma Lamega Chumemkar. Number two is that it's Doma Lepiron Chov, which is also on Shabbos. You can't pay off a debt on Shabbos. And three, Lamaisa, the money is Mokta. Now you could do Pinyan Ben with Shabbat Kesef, but the Mokta thing is not as critical. But the other two, the Rivash says you can't do a Pinyan Ben on Shabbos, and we're nowhere like that. We don't do Pinyan Ben on Shabbos. The Trumas Hadeshen brings up a fancier scenario. So why not do it before Shabbos, and then have the Chalos take place? And the Gemara says you could do that, to give the money to the Kohen before the 30 days, and have it take effect on Shabbos when the Pinyan Ben will take place. So he says two problems. One is, when are you going to say the brachas? And number two is, when are you going to make the suda? Meaning, normally we do it all together and we have the suda, and for Pinyan Ben we generally do the suda. We start the suda first and then make the brachas. But you can do it at the time that you're doing the Maisa, not the Chalos. It's kind of anticlimactic to kind of do the Pidyon Ben on a Thursday, and then what? On Shabbos, you know, you look at your watch, and depending on what sheet that you hold with when Pidyon Ben should take place, so you say the kidney is going to take place at 11 o'clock, and you gather everyone, you make a bracha, and that doesn't really... Basically, the Trumas Hadeshen is saying that it's not a problem mitzad the Kenyan. That's the deal from the Trumas Hadeshen. Rabbi Kibager himself, I don't think Rabbi Kibager pointed it out, but later Achronim points this out. So, is this a steer? I mean, the Trumas Hadeshen seems to be endorsing the idea of setting up a Kenyan before Shabbos, having the Chalos take place on Shabbos, and his only issue with Pinyan Ben is kind of more, more ritual in nature than Shabbos related. Pinyan Ben related issues, not Shabbos related issues. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says that there's no stira between the Trumas Hadeshen and Rav Akiva Eiger. If you go through the Rivash, go back to the Rivash, what's the problem with Pinyan Ben on Shabbos? Either that it's Doma L'Mekachu Memkar, or that it's Doma L'Piron Chol. So why should these two things be problematic on Shabbos? He quotes Rashi. Rashi says that there's two problems with the Kinyan on Shabbos. Rashi is in source 8. That should be Lirshus Hektish. That it goes from... This is talking about Hektish. If there's a pasuk in Yeshaya, so Midivrei Sofrim, you're not allowed to do kinyanim on Shabbos. Inami mekachu memkar asi leksiva shtari mechira. You're going to write a shtar mechira. So it's either shemi yechtov or that there's a din rabbanon of midivrei sofrim of mimtzoch eftecha. So pinyan ben is not going to be a problem on Shabbos. Why? Because there's nothing to write down, and mimtzoch eftecha doesn't apply to a Dvar Mitzvah. We say, you're allowed to talk about, Divrei Mitzvah on Shabbos. You're allowed to hire a teacher on Shabbos, to hire a principal, whatever, somebody who's doing Melachas HaKodesh, even though you're allowed to hire, a different kind of employee on Shabbos, but you're allowed to talk about Dvar Mitzvah, so you would be allowed to do transactions on Shabbos. So for Pinyan Ben purposes, it wouldn't be a problem of Mimtzoch Eftecha, would only be a problem of Shemi Yechtov. So when the Trumas Hadeshen says that the main problem with the Pinyan Ben is that you can't make a suda, you don't want to make the brachos, that's because Pinyan Ben would be mutter on Shabbos, but other transactions which are not Dvar Mitzvah would not be permissible on Shabbos because of himself testifying. And Shemi Yechtov also would apply, meaning opinion of Ben, I think this is the point also, opinion of Ben is something to write down. You know, the Kohanim can't be Toveya people for not doing opinion of Ben. So if somebody did opinion of Ben, that's it. There's nothing to record. Whereas a normal Kenyan, there are things that need to be recorded. The Ksev Sofer also, and I think that he has a different approach, but he's Miyashiv, his grandfather's Shita, Rikiveger was his grandfather, with the Truma Sedeshin. So he says, he points out the following. There's a machlok between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam about Dvar Mitzvah, which we kind of glossed over when we presented Rav Moshe. So it's possible even that according to Rashi, that you could do a kedushin even on Shabbos because it's Dvar Mitzvah. And Rabbeinu Tam says no, Mitzvah Ka'ovid just means that my Guzru, not that you can actually make a case to do kedushin on Shabbos, but why would the rabbis prohibit it if it's Dvar Mitzvah? But so you have the other way around. According to Rabbeinu Tam, there's a possibility. Rashi holds that you could potentially do kedushin on Shabbos. Rabbeinu Tam holds you can't. Rabbeinu Tam will say that there's no problem to do a pinyan event on Shabbos Rabbeinu Tam holds that it's mutter to do Dvar Mitzvah on Shabbos, and therefore you would like to do Pinyan Ben on Shabbos. And therefore, Truma Sedeshin, when he says that you can do Pinyan Ben on Shabbos, is because the only issue is that it may may lead to writing, and if he did it before Shabbos, meaning you can't do it on Shabbos because it may lead to Ksiva, but you could do it before Shabbos because you're not going to write anything down. When would you write if you did a transaction that was, you know, let's say you did a transaction today, it's going to be Chal tomorrow. So what would you write down? And when would you write it down? If there was no way to back out of the deal, there's no reason to wait until the deal is Chal to write it down. If the deal is Chal now, I mean, if the deal is, if you, let's say, a regular business transaction, we sit down and make a deal, and we say it's not going into effect until tomorrow. So when would you write any, and there's no way to cancel the deal, that's just the way it is. We want to make sure that it's Chal, I don't know, some tax purposes, whatever, we want it to be Chal 2 days from now. And there's no way to back out. So what would you write down, and when would you write it down? You would write it down when you're doing the Maisa Kinyan, not when you're doing the Chalos Kinyan. So yeah, Enoch Hanami, you can't do a Pidyon HaBen on Shabbos itself, because that is Gzeira Shemi Yichto. But if you set it up before Shabbos, to the Chal on Shabbos, that's not a problem. Okay, so that's the sugya with Pidyon HaBen, and that's why Rabbi Akiva Eiger's Shita kind of stands in the face of the Truma Sedeshin. Meaning, if the Truma Sedeshin was Kolik, Rabbi Akiva Eiger doesn't address the Truma Sedeshin. If the Truma Sedeshin stood by itself, we would say, we have a Rishon who says that the only issue with doing the Pidyon HaBen, setting up the Kinyan in advance, is the Suda, so it sounds like it's mother to do the Kinyan before Shabbos, it's Chal on Shabbos. But after we're Miyashev, Rabbi Akiva Eiger with the Truma Sedeshin, so it's much harder to reject Rabbi Akiva Eiger based solely on the Ksav Sofer. Like I said, though, the Torah Ches said, you know, straight out, doesn't follow Rabbi Akiva Eiger, but many other Achronim do. The Tsupe Zafrank has another way of being miyashiv. He says that instead of a transaction to go into effect on Shabbos, the violation is on the buyer because the seller already did his part. And the seller participates at the time of the Maisik, and the buyer participates at the time of the Chalos. So Pidyon HaBen, there's no buyer. It's just a Pidyon Ba'alma. I heard this from Rabbi Parnas. At the Pidyon HaBen, you say my cause is tzvei. What would you prefer? The coin says, would you prefer to have the kid, or would you prefer to give me the money? So, well, what is that? You don't have a choice. You can't tell the coin take the kid. Rabbi Parnas, I think he quoted this from the Brisker Rav, said that no, it's that we're trying to make it look like a real pidyon. Obviously, the Pidyon HaBen is not a real pidyon, but we're trying to emulate. You know, if you look at the Sforno in Parshas Bo, he talks about this. There's like a whole history of Pidyon HaBen. If you follow it, Pidyon HaBen appears like 9 times in the Torah, and it kind of morphed as Jewish history moves along. The Chazanish also, Chazanish has like one piece in Orach Chaim. I think it's Kufafei. He talks about like the history is the right word, but the development of mitzvot in the Midbar. He mentions this too about I think he mentions Pidyon HaBen as one of the examples. That the mitzvah kind of morphed based on the faith of the Bechorim and whatever, but the Sforno says that in Perek Yabez and Shmos that at one point in time it was a real pidyon that they were mamish muktish like anything else that was kadosh, and the pidyon actually removed that kedusha. So Rav Tzipi Safranks says that's the difference between Pidyon HaBen and anything else. Pidyon HaBen, you can theoretically do on Shabbos because there's no buyer. But a regular Kenyan, there's a buyer, so the buyer, it would be problematic for him. Rav Tzipi Safranks' point is important, though, because he's meaning his yishu is going to be nogea for a sale where, let's say, a goy buys something on Shabbos and you're the seller. So if you're going to say that the only problem is that the chalos happened is the fact that it's only a problem for you to be involved in the maisa kinyan, but if you're part of a chalos kinyan, that's only a problem if you're the buyer. Then it's not a problem if your buyer isn't Jewish. It's not your issue that he experienced the chalos kinyan on Shabbos. And similarly, if you know, set up a transaction before Shabbos to be chal on Shabbos, and the buyer is not Jewish, according to the case of Frank, it would ostensibly be okay. Now, the idea of having an automated transaction take place on Shabbos is not new to the internet. Vending machines were around already for like close to 100 years. And so this was already discussed. Can you own a vending machine that's operating on Shabbos? So the Maharshag, Shimon Greenwald, writes that maybe even Rabbi Akiva Eiger would agree that you can own the vending machine because he was only concerned about a transaction that the chalos takes place on Shabbos, but you set it up that the chalos take place on Shabbos. But if you own a vending machine and you're in... you're in Florida, and the vending machine could be in Arkansas, and some guy's just buying something, you have no awareness that anything's even taking place on Shabbos, not on Shabbos, that he thinks maybe Rabbi Akiva Eiger would agree. And the Givas HaLevona, who's the Kelly Bambach, so he goes with the opposite approach, that even those who are cholik on Rabbi Akiva Eiger, that's when you set up the Maisa Kinyan before Shabbos and only the Chalos takes place. But if the Maisa Kinyan and the Chalos take place on Shabbos, then you're really up the creek and everybody will agree that it's a problem. And the Chelkas Yaakov has a kind of a middle approach here. He says that if it's the type of vending machine where the person using the machine can get the item whenever he wants, and you don't care if he gets it on Shabbos, before Shabbos, after Shabbos, so then that's problem is, if you have, let's say, something which you want in use all the time, let's say you own an arcade, or you own a pinball machine in an arcade, so you don't, it's supposed to run forever if it doesn't break. So you want people playing before Shabbos, you want people playing on Shabbos, you want people playing after Shabbos. But if you have a vending machine with soda, and it's in a mall somewhere, and you'd be just as happy if all the soda was purchased before Shabbos, then he doesn't think it's problematic. Lamaisa, the Shmir Shabbos Gilchus is Mekel, like the Marshag, that you're allowed to own a vending machine, as well as the Nimchas Yitzchak, he says, as long as it's not known to be a Jewish-owned thing.
There's no Chashash to be over anyone's name.
Right. It's just, here also, this is to bolster the Marshag, if it's only Xavier Shemi Yitzchak, it's hard to say that, again, there is the idea of Lof Lug Rabbanon, but it's hard to say that, there's a concern that you're going to write something down if somebody's buying something from a vending machine and you don't even know that it's happening.
I mean, you could say there's like a different kind of opinion because where there's never, nobody ever writes.
Right. So that's the sheet of the vending machine. Now, about 11, 12 years ago in Or Yisrael, which is a journal, so they had a collection of articles on these issues, and they pointed out that the vending machine is worse than, let's say, a website. With a vending machine, the money goes into the machine, you own the machine, so the money is being nicked now on Shabbos on your behalf by virtue of the fact that you own the machine. When you have a website, somebody puts an order in. Now, the credit card company is going to hold the money, but until you authorize the sale, it's not even a kinyan. Meaning, what we said before, that maybe there's a kinyan kesef, that's true if the item gets shipped out, and here's where Amazon might come in, Amazon may take the money, or certain, if PayPal, I think somebody told me this. Let's say you have a PayPal, you're a big PayPal seller. PayPal gives you a debit card that you can use, and it's totally on what you have in your PayPal account. If somebody buys something from you and they use PayPal, the money will hit your account right away. Now the money is yours, and you can, if it was a Monday, meaning there are other issues with buying things on Shabbos, but, on a regular Monday, if somebody purchases something, the money's in your account and it's done. And same thing with Shabbos, that if somebody buys something with PayPal, it's in your account. Although his money isn't taken until, I'm not sure, because the banks are closed on Shabbos. So I don't know. The way this person described it to me, though, your PayPal account will be credited on Shabbos if somebody buys something with PayPal via a credit card. So the writers in Or Yisrael said that since the banks are closed on Shabbos, that there's nothing, it's not even a mashu opinion, because until you get to your office on Monday and ship out the item or tell the bank to charge the credit card, so it's just a hold on their credit card account, it's not an actual opinion taking place. But with PayPal, they don't discuss PayPal, but somebody told me that's not exactly true, and that money, at least from the seller's side, will go into the seller's account. Whether the buyer's credit card is charged yet, that's a different story. Yeah.
Isn't it different, like art school, for example, they close in Shabbos. Isn't it different there because everyone who's buying things is Jewish?
Right. So you would imagine that.
I mean, this is not just Shema Yichud. This is mamish like the English thing.
Right. There are lifnei iver issues depending on what you're selling. Yeah, if you're selling Judaica, then you probably should close.
Like loads of universities order massive shipments from art school.
Right. We're talking right. I imagine right by art.
I know they order like massive.
I think right by art school is probably true. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But let's just say it's true.
Theoretically. I mean.
Well, they do close.
They do close. I'm saying it's probably why.
I mean, you can order something from the website.
Yeah, I'm. I don't know if you're mahuyev to do that because, you know, what are they? You know, this is a different issue in terms of. It's not lifnei evil. You're not enabling them to be mechal Shabbos.
They're like, closed anyway. Doing
they're closed, right? Right. So if they want to set it up like that, I mean.
Not try outreach department.
B&H Photo, which is rogue people are probably not Jewish.
They can't buy
the stores unless you allow them.
No, they get to get another place.
What's the, I'm saying, Ayla Dover Soap, like you have to, let's say, like, you own a store, so, and you own a store, do you need to put up a sign outside of the parking lot, you know, we are closed on Shabbos, so that they don't drive all the way up to the store and find out that you're not open on Shabbos? I mean, you know, like there's only so much you could do, and it's not so easy to just shut down a website. And you know, I guess you could have it on or off. I've
it could be on a timer.
What?
It could be on a timer.
Yeah, it could be on a timer. Yeah. Okay. I mean, this opens up another issue in terms of Lifnei Iver, Trever Zanara, and I'm not sure that you're. You have a website that's open, and they can order something. So, yeah, maybe they would have been doing something else that's not Malacha, but most likely they would have been shopping online and finding somewhere else. Or,
well, what about, let's make like a better case. If you have an exclusive item, exclusive Judaic item. Eichler, they're the only guys who sell this item. You Ramesh couldn't go anywhere, and you know the guys are Jewish.
Yeah, so to make the Kidian happen would be, would be with me either to leave the website open.
Fine, but
I'm saying if to let people browse, I don't think it's as much of an issue. I don't know. Then again, you could argue that there's always some place in the world where there are Jews who can benefit from it being open, too. You know, you're 3 hours behind California, and you have, Iron Control in Australia, and, So that's, the last 2 points. The Maram Shig actually talks about some sort of, auction type of transaction, which is similar to eBay. eBay is not as popular as when I prepared this, you know, the Maram Shik already points out that you could put in, if you could put in before Shabbos, a bid, and you don't have to pay for it on Shabbos, you're just setting it up. Basically, the way it works is some guy put in a bid already, so you put in a higher bid, but it won't go higher than what you need to go. So if the bid is for $25 right now, and you put in 20, and you put in 50, it'll go up to 26, and then if somebody puts in 27, it'll go up to 28. So the Maram Shik doesn't think that that's a problem, even if the auction ends on Shabbos, because you're basically telling them in advance, this is what I want to pay, and they're going to determine on Shabbos who they want to give it to, and it's their issue, not really yours. Rav Moshe talks about stocks on Shabbos. It's really yontif. More of a, stock market's closed on Shabbos, but in Yontif, he says it's straight out of Mir L'Nachar. He doesn't deal with many transactions, more and more turning towards automated trades. That gets back to our other issues, how much of it is the Maisa Kinyan that you're doing if you put in an order for them to sell if it reaches a certain point, or to buy if it reaches a certain point. So you're not doing anything on Shabbos, and it's seemingly automated, the Maisa Kinyan and the Chalos Kinyan take place on Shabbos, on Yontif, I'm sorry. So that's similar, I guess, to the vending machines, as opposed to, like, the websites, which, theoretically, nothing actually is happening on Shabbos, unless you're dealing with PayPal. So, just to summarize, we discussed, I went a little bit over. We discussed Kinyanim by credit card in general, whether that is Midin Evet Kinani or not. even if it is Midin Evikanani, Evikanani only serves the Torah's Kesef. So can you be Kona items the Kesef, and to what extent? Generally not, unless you're dealing with a non-Jew. With a non-Jew, then according to Rashi, you could. According to the end of Rishon, we need to be Kona Mashiacha. And then we discussed on Shabbos, there's a Gzeira Shem Yitzov, and there's Mitzvah Chetzachah might be Mutter L'Tzorach Mitzvah, which is why Pidyon HaBen, we might be a little more flexible with that. Gzeira Shem Yitzov may also not apply to Pidyon HaBen, which is why the Shemiz Dej is more flexible. Rabbi Akiva Eiger says that you can't set up a transaction that takes place on Shabbos, that the Chalos Pidyon takes place on Shabbos, which is where we get into automated transactions and how Rabbi Akiva Eiger is applied or not applied to that. And you have any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The DNA closes on Shabbos also.
We use the table.